I grabbed his chin and leaned forward so that our faces were inches apart. You listen to me, Edward Cullen. I am not pretending anything for your sake, okay? I didn't even know there was a reason to make you feel better until you started being all miserable. I've never been so happy in all my life. I wasn't this happy when you decided that you love me more than you wanted to kill me. Or the first morning I woke up and you were there waiting for me. Not when I heard your voice in the ballet studio. He flinched at the old memory of my close call with a hunting vampire. But I didn't pause. Or when you said I do, and I realized that somehow I get to keep you forever. Those are the happiest memories I have, and this is better than any of it. So just deal with it. He touched the frown line between my eyebrows. I'm making you unhappy now. I don't want to do that. Then don't you be unhappy. That's the only thing that's wrong here. His eyes tightened, then he took a deep breath and nodded. You're right. The past is past, and I can't do anything to change it. There's no sense in letting my mood sour this time for you. I'll do whatever I can to make you happy now. I examined his face suspiciously, and he gave me a serene smile. Whatever makes me happy? My stomach growled at the same time that I asked. You're hungry, he said quickly. He was swiftly out of the bed, stirring up a cloud of feathers, which reminded me. So why exactly did you decide to ruin Esme's pillows? I asked, sitting up and shaking more down from my hair. He had already pulled on a pair of loose khaki pants, and he stood by the door rumpling his hair, dislodging a few feathers of his own. I don't know if I decided to do anything last night, he muttered. We're just lucky it was the pillows and not you. He inhaled deeply, and then shook his head, as if shaking off the dark thought. A very authentic-looking smile spread across his face, but I guessed it took a lot of work to put it there. I slid carefully off the high bed and stretched again, more aware now of the aches and sore spots. I heard him gasp. He turned away from me, and his hands balled up, knuckles white. Do I look that hideous? I asked, working to keep my tone light. His breath caught, but he didn't turn. Probably to hide his expression from me. I walked to the bathroom to check for myself. I stared at my naked body in the full-length mirror behind the door. I definitely had worse. There was a faint shadow across one of my cheekbones and my lips were a little swollen. But other than that, my face was fine. The rest of me was decorated with patches of blue and purple. I concentrated on the bruises that would be the hardest to hide, my arms and my shoulders. They weren't so bad. My skin marked up easily. By the time a bruise showed, I'd usually forgotten how I'd come by it. Of course, these were just developing. I'd look even worse tomorrow. That would not make things any easier. I looked at my hair then and groaned. Bella? He was right there behind me as soon as I'd made a sound. I'll never get this all out of my hair. I pointed to my head where it looked like a chicken was nesting. I started picking at the feathers. You would be worried about your hair, he mumbled, but he came to stand behind me, pulling out the feathers much more quickly. How did you keep from laughing at this? I look ridiculous. He didn't answer. He just kept plucking. And I knew the answer anyway. There was nothing that would be funny to him in this mood. This isn't going to work, I sighed after a minute. It's all dried in. I'm going to have to try to wash it out. I turned around, wrapping my arms around his cool waist. Do you want to help me? I'd better find some food for you, he said in a quiet voice, and he gently unwound my arms. I sighed as he disappeared, moving too fast. It looked like my honeymoon was over. The thought put a big lump in my throat. When I was mostly feather-free and dressed in an unfamiliar white cotton dress that concealed the worst of the violet blotches, I padded off barefoot to where the smell of eggs and bacon and cheddar cheese was coming from. Edward stood in front of the stainless steel stove, sliding an omelet onto the light blue plate waiting on the counter. The scent of the food overwhelmed me. I felt like I could eat the plate in the frying pan, too. My stomach snarled. Here. He said. He turned with a smile on his face and set the plate on a small tiled table. I sat in one of the two metal chairs and started snarfing down the hot eggs. They burned my throat, but I didn't care. He sat down across from me. I'm not feeding you often enough. I swallowed and then reminded him. I was asleep. This is really good, by the way. Impressive for someone who doesn't eat. Food Network, he said, flashing my favorite crooked smile. I was happy to see it, happy that he seemed more like his normal self. Where did the eggs come from? I asked the cleaning crew to stock the kitchen. A first for this place. I'll have to ask them to deal with the feathers. He trailed off, his gaze fixed on a space above my head. I didn't respond, trying to avoid saying anything that would upset him again. I ate everything, though he'd made enough for two. Thank you, I told him. I leaned across the table to kiss him. He kissed me back automatically, and then suddenly stiffened and leaned away. I gritted my teeth, and the question I meant to ask came out sounding like an accusation. You aren't going to touch me again while we're here, are you? He hesitated, then half smiled and raised his hand to stroke my cheek. His fingers lingered softly on my skin, and I couldn't help leaning my face into his palm. You know that's not what I meant. He sighed and dropped his hand. I know. And you're right. He paused, lifting his chin slightly. And then he spoke again with firm conviction. I will not make love with you until you've been changed. I will never hurt you again. Chapter 6. Distractions. My entertainment became the number one priority on Isle Esme. We snorkeled. Well, I snorkeled while he flaunted his ability to go without oxygen indefinitely. We explored the small jungle that ringed the rocky little peak. We visited the parrots that lived in the canopy on the south end of the island. We watched the sunset from the rocky western cove. We swam with the porpoises that played in the warm, shallow waters there. Or at least I did. When Edward was in the water, the porpoises disappeared as if a shark was near. I knew what was going on. He was trying to keep me busy, distracted, so that I wouldn't continue badgering him about the sex thing. Whenever I tried to talk him into taking it easy with one of the million DVDs under the big screen plasma TV, he would lure me out of the house with magic words like coral reefs and submerged caves and sea turtles. We were going, going, going all day, so that I found myself completely famished and exhausted when the sun eventually set. I drooped over my plate after I finished dinner every night. Once I'd actually fallen asleep right at the table and he'd had to carry me to bed. Part of it was that Edward always made too much food for one, but I was so hungry after swimming and climbing all day that I ate most of it. Then full and worn out, I could barely keep my eyes open. All part of the plan, no doubt. Exhaustion didn't help much with my attempts at persuasion, but I didn't give up. I tried reasoning, pleading, and grouching, all to no avail. I was usually unconscious before I could really press my case far. And then my dreams felt so real. Nightmares, mostly. Made more vivid, I guessed, by the two bright colors of the island, that I woke up tired no matter how long I slept. About a week or so after we'd gotten to the island, I decided to try compromise. It had worked for us in the past. I was sleeping in the blue room now. The cleaning crew wasn't due until the next day, and so the white room still had a snowy blanket of down. The blue room was smaller, the bed more reasonably proportioned. The walls were dark, paneled in teak, and the fittings were all luxurious blue silk. I'd taken to wearing some of Alice's lingerie collection to sleep in at night, which weren't so revealing compared to the scanty bikini she'd packed for me when it came right down to it. I wondered if she'd seen a vision of why I would want such things, and then shuddered, embarrassed by that thought. I'd started out slow with innocent ivory satins, worried that revealing more of my skin would be the opposite of helpful, but ready to try anything. Edward seemed to notice nothing, as if I were wearing the same ratty old sweats I wore at home. The bruises were much better now, yellowing in some places and disappearing altogether in others. So tonight I pulled out one of the scarier pieces as I got ready in the paneled bathroom. It was black, lacy, and embarrassing to look at even when it wasn't on. I was careful not to look in the mirror before I went back to the bedroom. I didn't want to lose my nerve. I had the satisfaction of watching his eyes pop open wide for just a second before he controlled his expression. "What do you think?" I asked, pirouetting so that he could see every angle. He cleared his throat. "You look beautiful. You always do." "Thanks," I said a bit sourly. I was too tired to resist climbing quickly into the soft bed. He put his arms around me and pulled me against his chest, but this was routine. It was too hot to sleep without his cool body close. "I'll make you a deal," I said sleepily. "I will not make any deals with you," he answered. "You haven't even heard what I'm offering. It doesn't matter." I sighed. Dang it, and I really wanted... Oh well. He rolled his eyes. I closed mine and let the bait sit there. I yawned. It took only a minute, not long enough for me to zonk out. "All right, what is it you want?" I gritted my teeth for a second, fighting a smile. If there was one thing he couldn't resist, it was an opportunity to give me something. Well, I was thinking. I know that the whole Dartmouth thing was just supposed to be a cover story, but honestly, one semester of college probably wouldn't kill me, I said, echoing his words from long ago when he tried to persuade me to put off becoming a vampire. Charlie would get a thrill out of Dartmouth stories, I bet. Sure, it might be embarrassing if I can't keep up with all the brainiacs. Still, 18, 19, it's really not such a big difference. It's not like I'm going to get crow's feet in the next year. He was silent for a long moment. Then in a low voice, he said, "You would wait. You would stay human." I held my tongue, letting the offer sink in. "Why are you doing this to me?" he said through his teeth, his tone suddenly angry. "Isn't it hard enough without all of this?" He grabbed a handful of lace that was ruffled on my thigh. For a moment, I thought he was going to rip it from the seam. Then his hand relaxed. "It doesn't matter. I won't make any deals with you." "I want to go to college." "No, you don't. And there's nothing that is worth risking your life again. That's worth hurting you." "But I do want to go." "Well, it's not college as much as it's that I want to be human a little while longer." He closed his eyes and exhaled through his nose. "You are making me insane, Bella. Haven't we had this argument a million times? You always begging to be a vampire without delay?" "Yes, but, well, I have a reason to be human that I didn't have before."
"What's that?"
"Guess," I said, and I dragged myself off the pillows to kiss him. He kissed me back, but not in a way that made me think I was winning. It was more like he was being careful not to hurt my feelings. He was completely, maddeningly in control of himself. Gently, he pulled me away after a moment and cradled me against his chest. "You are so human, Bella. Ruled by your hormones," he chuckled. "That's the whole point, Edward. I like this part of being human. I don't want to give it up yet. I don't want to wait through years of being a blood-crazed newborn for some part of this to come back to me." I yawned and he smiled. "You're tired. Sleep, love." He started humming the lullaby he'd composed for me when we first met. "I wonder why I'm so tired," I muttered sarcastically. "That couldn't be part of your scheme or anything." He just chuckled once and went back to humming. "For as tired as I've been, you'd think I'd sleep better." The song broke off. "You've been sleeping like the dead, Bella. You haven't said a word in your sleep since we got here. If it weren't for the snoring, I'd worry you were slipping into a coma." I ignored the snoring jibe. I didn't snore. "I haven't been tossing? That's weird. Usually I'm all over the bed when I'm having nightmares. And shouting. You've been having nightmares? Vivid ones. They make me so tired." I yawned. "I can't believe I haven't been babbling about them all night." "What are they about?" "Different things, but the same, you know.
because of the colors.
Colors?
It's all so bright and real. Usually when I'm dreaming, I know that I am. With these, I don't know I'm asleep. It makes them scarier.
He sounded disturbed when he spoke again.
What is frightening you?
I shuddered slightly.
Mostly, I hesitated.
Mostly? He prompted.
I wasn't sure why, but I didn't want to tell him about the child in my recurring nightmare. There was something private about that particular horror. So instead of giving him the full description, I gave him just one element, certainly enough to frighten me or anyone else.
The Volturi, I whispered.
He hugged me tighter.
They aren't going to bother us anymore. You'll be immortal soon, and they'll have no reason.
I let him comfort me, feeling a little guilty that he'd misunderstood. The nightmares weren't like that, exactly. It wasn't that I was afraid for myself. I was afraid for the boy. He wasn't the same boy as that first dream. The vampire child with the blood-red eyes who sat on a pile of dead people I loved. This boy I dreamed of 4 times in the last week was definitely human. His cheeks were flushed and his wide eyes were a soft green. But just like the other child, he shook with fear and desperation as the Volturi closed in on us. In this dream that was both new and old, I simply had to protect the unknown child. There was no other option. At the same time, I knew that I would fail. He saw the desolation on my face.
What can I do to help?
I shook it off. They're just dreams, Edward.
Do you want me to sing to you? I'll sing all night if it will keep the bad dreams away.
They're not all bad. Some are nice. So colorful. Underwater, with the fish and the coral. It all seems like it's really happening. I don't know that I'm dreaming. Maybe this island is the problem. It's really bright here.
Do you want to go home?
No, not yet. Can't we stay a while longer?
We can stay as long as you want, Bella, he promised me.
When does the semester start? I wasn't paying attention before.
He sighed.
He may have started humming again, too, but I was under before I could be sure. Later, when I awoke in the dark, it was with shock. The dream had been so very real, so vivid, so sensory. I gasped aloud now, disoriented by the dark room. Only a second ago, it seemed, I had been under the brilliant sun.
Bella,
Edward whispered, his arms tight around me, shaking me gently.
Are you all right, sweetheart?
Oh, I gasped again. Just a dream. Not real. To my utter astonishment, tears overflowed from my eyes without warning, gushing down my face.
Bella,
he said, louder, alarmed now.
What's wrong?
He wiped the tears from my hot cheeks with cold, frantic fingers, but others followed.
It was only a dream.
I couldn't contain the low sob that broke in my voice. The senseless tears were disturbing, but I couldn't get control of the staggering grief that gripped me. I wanted so badly for the dream to be real.
It's okay, love. You're fine. I'm here.
He rocked me back and forth a little too fast to soothe.
Did you have another nightmare?
It wasn't real.
It wasn't real.
Not a nightmare. I shook my head, scrubbing the back of my hand against my eyes. It was a good dream. My voice broke again.
Then why are you crying? He asked, bewildered.
Because I woke up, I wailed, wrapping my arms around his neck in a chokehold and sobbing into his throat. He laughed once at my logic, but the sound was tense with concern.
Everything's all right, Bella. Take deep breaths.
It was so real, I cried. I wanted it to be real.
Tell me about it, he urged. Maybe that will help.
We were on the beach. I trailed off, pulling back to look with tear-filled eyes at his anxious angel's face, dim in the darkness. I stared at him broodingly as the unreasonable grief began to ebb.
And?
He finally prompted. I blinked the tears out of my eyes, torn.
Oh, Edward. Tell me, Bella,
he pleaded, eyes wild with worry at the pain in my voice. But I couldn't. Instead, I clutched my arms around his neck again and locked my mouth with his feverishly. It wasn't desire at all. It was need, acute to the point of pain. His response was instant, but quickly followed by his rebuff. He struggled with me as gently as he could in his surprise, holding me away, grasping my shoulders. "No, Bella," he insisted, looking at me as if he was worried that I'd lost my mind. My arms dropped, defeated, the bizarre tears spilling in a fresh torrent down my face, a new sob rising in my throat. He was right. I must be crazy. He stared at me with confused, anguished eyes. "I'm sorry," I mumbled. But he pulled me to him then, hugging me tightly to his marble chest. "I can't, Bella. I can't." His moan was agonized. "Please," I said, my plea muffled against his skin. "Please, Edward." I couldn't tell if he was moved by the tears trembling in my voice, or if he was unprepared to deal with the suddenness of my attack, or if his need was simply as unbearable in that moment as my own. But whatever the reason, he pulled my lips back to his, surrendering with a groan. And we began where my dream had left off. I stayed very still when I woke up in the morning and tried to keep my breathing even. I was afraid to open my eyes. I was lying across Edward's chest, but he was very still and his arms were not wrapped around me. That was a bad sign. I was afraid to admit I was awake and face his anger, no matter whom it was directed at today. Carefully, I peeked through my eyelashes. He was staring up at the dark ceiling, his arms behind his head. I pulled myself up on my elbow so that I could see his face better. It was smooth, expressionless. "How much trouble am I in?" I asked in a small voice. "Heaps," he said, but turned his head and smirked at me. I breathed a sigh of relief. "I am sorry," I said. "I didn't mean, well, I don't know exactly what that was last night." I shook my head at the memory of the irrational tears, the crushing grief. "You never did tell me what your dream was about." "I guess I didn't, but I sort of showed you what it was about," I laughed nervously. "Oh," he said. His eyes widened and then he blinked. "Interesting." "It was a very good dream," I murmured. He didn't comment, so a few seconds later I asked, "Am I forgiven?" "I'm thinking about it." I sat up, planning to examine myself. There didn't seem to be any feathers, at least. But as I moved, an odd wave of vertigo hit. I swayed and fell back against the pillows. "Whoa, head rush." His arms were around me then. "You slept for a long time, 12 hours. 12? How strange. I gave myself a quick once-over while I spoke, trying to be inconspicuous about it. I looked fine. The bruises on my arms were still a week old, yellowing. I stretched experimentally. I felt fine, too. Well, better than fine, actually. "Is the inventory complete?" I nodded sheepishly. "The pillows all appear to have survived." "Unfortunately, I can't say the same for your, nightgown." He nodded toward the foot of the bed, where several scraps of black lace were strewn across the silk sheets. "That's too bad," I said. "I liked that one." "I did too. Were there any other casualties?" I asked timidly. "I'll have to buy Esme a new bed frame," he confessed, glancing over his shoulder. I followed his gaze and was shocked to see that large chunks of wood had apparently been gouged from the left side of the headboard. I frowned. "You'd think I would have heard that. You seem to be extraordinarily unobservant when your attention is otherwise involved." "I was a bit absorbed," I admitted, blushing a deep red. He touched my burning cheek and sighed. "I'm really going to miss that." I stared at his face, searching for any signs of the anger or remorse I feared. He gazed back at me evenly, his expression calm but otherwise unreadable. "How are you feeling?" He laughed. What? I demanded. You look so guilty, like you've committed a crime. I feel guilty, I muttered. So you seduced your all-too-willing husband. That's not a capital offense. He seemed to be teasing. My cheeks got hotter. The word seduced implies a certain amount of premeditation. Maybe that was the wrong word, he allowed. You're not angry? He smiled ruefully. I'm not angry. Why not? Well, he paused. I didn't hurt you, for one thing. It was easier this time to control myself, to channel the excesses. His eyes flickered to the damaged frame again. Maybe because I had a better idea of what to expect. A hopeful smile started to spread across my face. I told you that it was all about practice. He rolled his eyes. My stomach growled and he laughed. Breakfast time for the human? He asked. Please, I said, hopping out of bed. I moved too quickly, though, and had to stagger drunkenly to regain my balance. He caught me before I could stumble into the dresser. Are you all right? If I don't have a better sense of equilibrium in my next life, I'm demanding a refund. I cooked this morning, frying up some eggs, too hungry to do anything more elaborate. Impatient, I flipped them onto a plate after just a few minutes. Since when do you eat eggs sunny side up? He asked. Since now. Do you know how many eggs you've gone through in the last week? He pulled the trash bin out from under the sink. It was full of empty blue cartons. Weird, I said after swallowing a scorching bite. This place is messing with my appetite. And my dreams, and my already dubious balance. But I like it here. We'll probably have to leave soon, though, won't we? To make it to Dartmouth in time? Wow, I guess we need to find a place to live and stuff, too. He sat down next to me. You can give up the college pretense now. You've gotten what you wanted. And we didn't agree to a deal, so there are no strings attached. I snorted. It wasn't a pretense, Edward. I don't spend my free time plotting like some people do. What can we do to wear Bella out today? I said in a poor impression of his voice. He laughed, unashamed. I really do want a little more time being human. I leaned over to run my hand across his bare chest. I have not had enough. He gave me a dubious look. For this? He asked, catching my hand as it moved down his stomach. Sex was the key all along. He rolled his eyes. Why didn't I think of that? He muttered sarcastically. I could have saved myself a lot of arguments. I laughed. Yeah, probably. You are so human, he said again. I know. A hint of a smile pulled at his lips. We're going to Dartmouth? Really? I'll probably fail out in one semester. I'll tutor you. The smile was wide now. You're going to love college. Do you think we can find an apartment this late? He grimaced, looking guilty. Well, we sort of already have a house there. You know, just in case. You bought a house? Real estate is a good investment. I raised one eyebrow and then let it go. So we're ready then. I'll have to see if we can keep your before car for a little longer. Yes, heaven forbid I not be protected from tanks. He grinned. How much longer can we stay? I asked. We're fine on time. A few more weeks if you want. And then we can visit Charlie before we go to New Hampshire. We could spend Christmas with Renee. His words painted a very happy immediate future, one free of pain for everyone involved. The Jacob drawer, all but forgotten, rattled, and I amended the thought. For almost everyone. This wasn't getting any easier. Now that I'd discovered exactly how good being human could be, it was tempting to let my plans drift. 18 or 19 or 20. Did it really matter? I wouldn't change so much in a year. And being human with Edward. The choice got trickier every day. A few weeks, I agreed. And then because there never seemed to be enough time, I added, So I was thinking, You know what I was saying about practice before? He laughed. Can you hold on to that thought? I hear a boat. The cleaning crew must be here. He wanted me to hold on to that thought. So did that mean he was not going to give me any more trouble about practicing? I smiled. Let me explain the mess in the white room to Gustavo, and then we can go out. There's a place in the jungle on the south. I don't want to go out. I am not hiking all over the island today. I want to stay here and watch a movie. He pursed his lips, trying not to laugh at my disgruntled tone. All right, whatever you'd like. Why don't you pick one out while I get the door? I didn't hear a knock. He cocked his head to the side, listening. A half second later, a faint, timid rap on the door sounded. He grinned and turned for the hallway. I wandered over to the shelves under the big TV and started scanning through the titles. It was hard to decide where to begin. They had more DVDs than a rental store. I could hear Edward's low, velvet voice as he came back down the hall, conversing fluidly in what I assumed was perfect Portuguese. Another, harsher, human voice answered in the same tongue. Edward led them into the room, pointing toward the kitchen on his way. The two Brazilians looked incredibly short and dark next to him. One was a round man, the other a slight female, both their faces creased with lines. Edward gestured to me with a proud smile, and I heard my name mixed in with a flurry of unfamiliar words. I flushed a little as I thought of the downy mess in the white room, which they would soon encounter. The little man smiled at me politely. But the tiny, coffee-skinned woman didn't smile. She stared at me with a mixture of shock, worry, and most of all, wide-eyed fear. Before I could react, Edward motioned for them to follow him toward the chicken coop, and they were gone. When he reappeared, he was alone. He walked swiftly to my side and wrapped his arms around me. "What's with her?" I whispered urgently, remembering her panicked expression. He shrugged unperturbed. "Cora's part Tikuna Indian. She was raised to be more superstitious, or you could call it more aware, than those who live in the modern world. She suspects what I am, or close enough." He still didn't sound worried. "They have their own legends here. The Libby Shoman, a blood-drinking demon who preys exclusively on beautiful women." He leered at me. "Beautiful women only? Well, that was kind of flattering." "She looked terrified," I said. "She is, but mostly she's worried about you." "Me?" "She's afraid of why I have you here all alone." He chuckled darkly, and then looked toward the wall of movies. "Oh, well, why don't you choose something for us to watch? That's an acceptably human thing to do." "Yes, I'm sure a movie will convince her that you're human." I laughed and clasped my arm securely around his neck, stretching up on my tiptoes. He leaned down so that I could kiss him, and then his arms tightened around me, lifting me off the floor so he didn't have to bend. "Movie schmovie," I muttered, as his lips moved down my throat, twisting my fingers in his bronze hair. Then I heard a gasp, and he put me down abruptly. Cora stood frozen in the hallway, feathers in her black hair, a large sack of more feathers in her arms, an expression of horror on her face. She stared at me, her eyes bugging out as I blushed and looked down. Then she recovered herself and murmured something that, even in an unfamiliar language, was clearly an apology. Edward smiled and answered in a friendly tone. She turned her dark eyes away and continued down the hall. "She was thinking what I think she was thinking, wasn't she?" I muttered. He laughed at my convoluted sentence. "Yes." "Here," I said, reaching out at random and grabbing a movie. "Put this on and we can pretend to watch it." It was an old musical with smiling faces and fluffy dresses on the front. "Very honeymoonish," Edward approved. While actors on the screen danced their way through a perky introduction song, I lolled on the sofa, snuggled into Edward's arms. "Will we move back into the white room now?" I wondered idly. "I don't know. I've already mangled the headboard in the other room beyond repair. Maybe if we limit the destruction to one area of the house, Esme might invite us back someday." I smiled widely. "So there will be more destruction?" He laughed at my expression. I think it might be safer if it's premeditated rather than if I wait for you to assault me again. It would only be a matter of time, I agreed casually, but my pulse was racing in my veins. Is there something the matter with your heart? Nope, healthy as a horse. I paused. Did you want to go survey the demolition zone now? Maybe it would be more polite to wait until we're alone. You may not notice me tearing the furniture apart, but it would probably scare them. In truth, I had already forgotten the people in the other room. Right. Drat. Gustavo and Cora moved quietly through the house while I waited impatiently for them to finish and tried to pay attention to the happily ever after on the screen. I was starting to get sleepy, though according to Edward, I'd slept half the day, when a rough voice startled me. Edward sat up, keeping me cradled against him, and answered Gustavo in flowing Portuguese. Gustavo nodded and walked quietly toward the front door. They're finished, Edward told me. So that would mean that we're alone now? How about lunch first? He suggested. I bit my lip, torn by the dilemma. I was pretty hungry. With a smile, he took my hand and led me to the kitchen. He knew my face so well, it didn't matter that he couldn't read my mind. This is getting out of hand, I complained when I finally felt full. Do you want to swim with the dolphins this afternoon? Burn off the calories? He asked. Maybe later. I had another idea for burning calories. And what was that? Well, there's an awful lot of headboard left. But I didn't finish. He'd already swept me up into his arms, and his lips silenced mine as he carried me with inhuman speed to the blue room. Chapter 7. Unexpected. The line of black advanced on me through the shroud-like mist. I could see their dark ruby eyes glinting with desire, lusting for the kill. Their lips pulled back over their sharp, wet teeth, some to snarl, some to smile. I heard the child behind me whimper, but I couldn't turn to look at him. Though I was desperate to be sure that he was safe, I could not afford any lapse in focus now. They ghosted closer, their black robes billowing slightly with the movement. I saw their hands curl into bone-colored claws. They started to drift apart, angling to come at us from all sides. We were surrounded. We were going to die. And then, like a burst of light from a flash, the whole scene was different. Yet nothing changed. The Volturi still stalked toward us, poised to kill. All that really changed was how the picture looked to me. Suddenly, I was hungry for it. I wanted them to charge. The panic changed to bloodlust as I crouched forward, a smile on my face, and a growl ripped through my bared teeth. I jolted upright, shocked out of the dream. The room was black. It was also steamy hot. Sweat matted my hair at the temples and rolled down my throat. I groped the warm sheets and found them empty. Edward? Just then my fingers encountered something smooth and flat and stiff. One sheet of paper, folded in half. I took the note with me and felt my way across the room to the light switch. The outside of the note was addressed to Mrs. Cullen. I'm hoping you won't wake and notice my absence, but if you should, I'll be back very soon. I've just gone to the mainland to hunt. Go back to sleep, and I'll be here when you wake again. I love you. I sighed. We'd been here about 2 weeks now, so I should have been expecting that he would have to leave. But I hadn't been thinking about time. We seemed to exist outside of time here, just drifting along in a perfect state. I wiped the sweat off my forehead. I felt absolutely wide awake, though the clock on the dresser said it was after 1. I knew I would never be able to sleep as hot and sticky as I felt. Not to mention the fact that if I shut off the light and closed my eyes, I was sure to see those prowling black figures in my head. I got up and wandered aimlessly through the dark house, flipping on lights. It felt so big and empty without Edward there. Different. I ended up in the kitchen and decided that maybe comfort food was what I needed. I poked around in the fridge until I found all the ingredients for fried chicken. The popping and sizzling of the chicken in the pan was a nice homey sound. I felt less nervous while it filled the silence. It smelled so good that I started eating it right out of the pan, burning my tongue in the process. By the fifth or sixth bite, though, it had cooled enough for me to taste it. My chewing slowed. Was there something off about the flavor? I checked the meat, and it was white all the way through, but I wondered if it was completely done. I took another experimental bite. I chewed twice. Ugh, definitely bad. I jumped up to spit it into the sink. Suddenly, the chicken and oil smell was revolting. I took the whole plate and shook it into the garbage, then opened the windows to chase away the scent. A coolish breeze had picked up outside. It felt good on my skin. I was abruptly exhausted, but I didn't want to go back to the hot room. So I opened more windows in the TV room and lay on the couch right beneath them. I turned on the same movie we'd watched the other day and quickly fell asleep to the bright opening song. When I opened my eyes again, the sun was halfway up the sky, but it was not the light that woke me. Cool arms were around me, pulling me against him. At the same time, a sudden pain twisted in my stomach, almost like the aftershock of catching a punch in the gut. "I'm sorry," Edward was murmuring as he wiped a wintry hand across my clammy forehead. "So much for thoroughness. I didn't think about how hot you would be with me gone. I'll have an air conditioner installed before I leave again." I couldn't concentrate on what he was saying. "Excuse me," I gasped, struggling to get free of his arms. He dropped his hold automatically. "Bella?" I streaked for the bathroom with my hand clamped over my mouth. I felt so horrible that I didn't even care at first that he was with me while I crouched over the toilet and was violently sick. "Bella? What's wrong?" I couldn't answer yet. He held me anxiously, keeping my hair out of my face, waiting till I could breathe again. "Damn rancid chicken," I moaned. "Are you all right?" His voice was strained. "Fine," I panted. "It's just food poisoning. You don't need to see this. Go away."
"Not likely, Bella."
"Go away," I moaned again, struggling to get up so I could rinse my mouth out. He helped me gently, ignoring the weak shoves I aimed at him. After my mouth was clean, he carried me to the bed and sat me down carefully, supporting me with his arms.
"Food poisoning?"
"Yeah," I croaked. "I made some chicken last night. It tasted off, so I threw it out, but I ate a few bites first."
He put a cold hand on my forehead. It felt nice. "How do you feel now?"
I thought about that for a moment. The nausea had passed as suddenly as it had come, and I felt like I did any other morning. "Pretty normal. A little hungry, actually." He made me wait an hour and keep down a big glass of water before he fried me some eggs. I felt perfectly normal, just a little tired from being up in the middle of the night. He put on CNN. We'd been so out of touch. World War III could have broken out and we wouldn't have known. And I lounged drowsily across his lap. I got bored with the news and twisted around to kiss him. Just like this morning, a sharp pain hit my stomach when I moved. I lurched away from him, my hand tight over my mouth. I knew I'd never make it to the bathroom this time, so I ran to the kitchen sink. He held my hair again.
"Maybe we should go back to Rio, see a doctor," he suggested anxiously when I was rinsing my mouth afterward.
I shook my head and edged toward the hallway. Doctors meant needles. "I'll be fine right after I brush my teeth." When my mouth tasted better, I searched through my suitcase for the little first aid kit Alice had packed for me, full of human things like bandages and painkillers, and my object now, Pepto-Bismol. Maybe I could settle my stomach and calm Edward down. But before I found the Pepto, I happened across something else that Alice had packed for me. I picked up the small blue box and stared at it in my hand for a long moment, forgetting everything else. Then I started counting in my head. Once, twice, again. The knock startled me. The little box fell back into the suitcase.
"Are you well?" Edward asked through the door. Did you get sick again?
Yes and no, I said, but my voice sounded strangled.
Bella, can I please come in?
Worriedly now.
Okay.
He came in and appraised my position, sitting cross-legged on the floor by the suitcase, and my expression blank and staring. He sat next to me, his hand going to my forehead at once.
What's wrong? How many days has it been since the wedding?
I whispered.
17, he answered automatically. Bella, what is it?
I was counting again. I held up a finger, cautioning him to wait, and mouthed the numbers to myself. I'd been wrong about the days before. We'd been here longer than I'd thought. I started over again.
Bella, he whispered urgently.
I'm losing my mind over here. I tried to swallow. It didn't work. So I reached into the suitcase and fumbled around until I found the little blue box of tampons again. I held them up silently. He stared at me in confusion.
What? Are you trying to pass this illness off as PMS?
No, I managed to choke out. No, Edward. I'm trying to tell you that my period is 5 days late. His facial expression didn't change. It was like I hadn't spoken. I don't think I have food poisoning, I added. He didn't respond. He had turned into a sculpture. The dreams, I mumbled to myself in a flat voice. Sleeping so much, the crying, all that food. Oh, oh, oh. Edward's stare seemed glassy, as if he couldn't see me anymore. Reflexively, almost involuntarily, my hand dropped to my stomach.
Oh!
I squeaked again. I lurched to my feet, slipping out of Edward's unmoving hands. I'd never changed out of the little silk shorts and camisole I'd worn to bed. I yanked the blue fabric out of the way and stared at my stomach.
Impossible, I whispered.
I had absolutely no experience with pregnancy or babies or any part of that world, but I wasn't an idiot. I'd seen enough movies and TV shows to know that this wasn't how it worked. I was only 5 days late. If I was pregnant, my body wouldn't even have registered that fact. I would not have morning sickness. I would not have changed my eating or sleeping habits. And I most definitely would not have a small but defined bump sticking out between my hips. I twisted my torso back and forth, examining it from every angle, as if it would disappear in exactly the right light. I ran my fingers over the subtle bulge, surprised by how rock hard it felt under my skin.
Impossible, I said again,
because bulge or no bulge, period or no period, and there was definitely no period, though I'd never been late a day in my life. There was no way I could be pregnant. The only person I'd ever had sex with was a vampire, for crying out loud. A vampire who was still frozen on the floor with no sign of ever moving again. So there had to be some other explanation then. Something wrong with me. A strange South American disease with all the signs of pregnancy, only accelerated. And then I remembered something. A morning of internet research that seemed a lifetime ago now. Sitting at the old desk in my room at Charlie's house, with gray light glowing dully through the window, staring at my ancient wheezing computer, reading avidly through a website called Vampires A to Z. It had been less than 24 hours since Jacob Black, trying to entertain me with the Quileute legends he didn't believe in yet, had told me that Edward was a vampire. I'd scanned anxiously through the first entries on the site, which was dedicated to vampire myths around the world. The Filipino Danag, the Hebrew Estri, the Romanian Vera Colaci, the Italian Stragoni Benefici, a legend actually based on my new father-in-law's early exploits with the Volturi. Not that I'd known anything about that at the time. I'd paid less and less attention as the stories had grown more and more implausible. I only remembered vague bits of the later entries. They mostly seemed like excuses dreamed up to explain things like infant mortality rates and infidelity.
No, honey, I'm not having an affair. That sexy woman you saw sneaking out of the house was an evil succubus. I'm lucky I escaped with my life.
Of course,
With what I knew now about Tanya and her sisters, I suspected that some of those excuses had been nothing but fact. There had been one for the ladies, too. How can you accuse me of cheating on you just because you've come home from a 2-year sea voyage and I'm pregnant? It was the incubus. He hypnotized me with his mystical vampire powers. That had been part of the definition of the incubus, the ability to father children with his hapless prey. I shook my head, dazed. But I thought of Esme and especially Rosalie. Vampires couldn't have children. If it were possible, Rosalie would have found a way by now. The incubus myth was nothing but a fable. Except that, well, there was a difference. Of course Rosalie could not conceive a child, because she was frozen in the state in which she passed from human to inhuman, totally unchanging. And human women's bodies had to change to bear children. The constant change of a monthly cycle, for one thing, and then the bigger changes needed to accommodate a growing child. Rosalie's body couldn't change. But mine could. Mine did. I touched the bump on my stomach that had not been there yesterday. And human men, well, they pretty much stayed the same from puberty to death. I remembered a random bit of trivia, gleaned from who knows where. Charlie Chaplin was in his 70s when he fathered his youngest child. Men had no such thing as childbearing years or cycles of fertility. Of course, how would anyone know a vampire man could father children when their partners were not able? What vampire on earth would have the restraint necessary to test the theory with a human woman? Or the inclination? I could think of only one. Part of my head was sorting through fact and memory and speculation, while the other half, the part that controlled the ability to move even the smallest muscles, was stunned beyond the capacity for normal operations. I couldn't move my lips to speak, though I wanted to ask Edward to please explain to me what was going on. I needed to go back to where he sat, to touch him, but my body wouldn't follow instructions. I could only stare at my shocked eyes in the mirror, my fingers gingerly pressed against the swelling on my torso. And then, like in my vivid nightmare last night, the scene abruptly transformed. Everything I saw in the mirror looked completely different, though nothing actually was different. What happened to change everything was that a soft little nudge bumped my hand from inside my body. In the same moment, Edward's phone rang, shrill and demanding. Neither of us moved. It rang again and again. I tried to tune it out while I pressed my fingers to my stomach, waiting. In the mirror, my expression was no longer bewildered. It was wondering now. I barely noticed when the strange silent tears started streaming down my cheeks. The phone kept ringing. I wished Edward would answer it. I was having a moment, possibly the biggest of my life. Ring, ring, ring. Finally, the annoyance broke through everything else. I got down on my knees next to Edward. I found myself moving more carefully, 1,000 times more aware of the way each motion felt, and patted his pockets until I found the phone. I half expected him to thaw out and answer it himself, but he was perfectly still. I recognized the number, and I could easily guess why she was calling. "Hi, Alice," I said. My voice wasn't much better than before. It cleared my throat. "Bella? Bella, are you okay?" "Yeah, is Carlisle there?" "He is? What's the problem?" "I'm not 100% sure. Is Edward all right?" she asked warily. She called Carlisle's name away from the phone and then demanded, "Why didn't he pick up the phone?" before I could answer her first question. "I'm not sure." "Bella? What's going on? I just saw..." "What did you see?" There was a silence. "Here's Carlisle," she finally said. It felt like ice water had been injected in my veins. If Alice had seen a vision of me with a green-eyed, angel-faced child in my arms, she would have answered me, wouldn't she? While I waited through the split second it took for Carlisle to speak, the vision I'd imagined for Alice danced behind my lids. A tiny, beautiful little baby. Even more beautiful than the boy in my dream. A tiny Edward in my arms. Warmth shot through my veins, chasing the ice away.
Bella? It's Carlyle.
What's going on?
I
wasn't sure how to answer.
Would he laugh at my conclusions? Tell me I was crazy? Was I just having another colorful dream?
I'm a little worried about Edward. Can vampires go into shock?
Has he been harmed?
Carlyle's voice was suddenly urgent.
No, no, I assured him. Just taken by surprise.
I don't understand, Bella.
I think that maybe I might be,
I took a deep breath,
pregnant.
As if to back me up, there was another tiny nudge in my abdomen. My hand flew to my stomach. After a long pause, Carlyle's medical training kicked in.
When was the first day of your last menstrual cycle?
16 days before the wedding?
I'd done the mental math thoroughly enough just before to be able to answer with certainty.
How do you feel?
Weird, I told him, and my voice broke. Another trickle of tears dribbled down my cheeks.
This is going to sound crazy. Look, I know it's way too early for any of this. Maybe I am crazy. But I'm having bizarre dreams and eating all the time and crying and throwing up and I swear something moved inside me just now.
Edward's head snapped up. I sighed in relief.
Edward held his hand out for the phone, his face white and hard.
I think Edward wants to talk to you.
Put him on, Carlyle said in a strained voice. Not entirely sure that Edward could talk, I put the phone in his outstretched hand.
He pressed it to his ear.
Is it possible? He whispered.
He listened for a long time, staring blankly at nothing.
And Bella? He asked.
His arm wrapped around me as he spoke, pulling me close into his side. He listened for what seemed like a long time and then said,
Yes. Yes, I will.
He pulled the phone away from his ear and pressed the end button. Right away, he dialed a new number.
What did Carlyle say? I asked impatiently.
Edward answered in a lifeless voice. He thinks you're pregnant. The word sent a warm shiver down my spine. The little nudger fluttered inside me.
Who are you calling now? I asked as he put the phone back to his ear.
The airport. We're going home.
Edward was on the phone for more than an hour without a break. I guessed that he was arranging our flight home, but I couldn't be sure because he wasn't speaking English. It sounded like he was arguing. He spoke through his teeth a lot. While he argued, he packed. He whirled around the room like an angry tornado, leaving order rather than destruction in his path. He threw a set of my clothes on the bed without looking at them, so I assumed it was time for me to get dressed. He continued with his argument while I changed, gesturing with sudden, agitated movements. When I could no longer bear the violent energy radiating out of him, I quietly left the room. His manic concentration made me sick to my stomach, not like the morning sickness, just uncomfortable. I would wait somewhere else for his mood to pass. I couldn't talk to this icy, focused Edward who honestly frightened me a little. Once again, I ended up in the kitchen. There was a bag of pretzels in the cupboard. I started chewing on them absently, staring out the window at the sand and rocks and trees and ocean, everything glittering in the sun. Someone nudged me. I know, I said. I don't want to go either.
I stared out the window for a moment, but the nudger didn't respond.
I don't understand, I whispered. What is wrong here?
Surprising, absolutely. Astonishing, even.
But wrong?
No.
So why was Edward so furious?
He was the one who had actually wished out loud for a shotgun wedding.
I tried to reason through it.
Maybe it wasn't so confusing that Edward wanted us to go home right away. He'd want Carlyle to check me out, make sure my assumption was right, though there was absolutely no doubt in my head at this point. Probably they'd want to figure out why I was already so pregnant, with the bump and the nudging and all of that. That wasn't normal.
Once I thought of this, I was sure I had it. He must be so worried about the baby. I hadn't gotten around to freaking out yet. My brain worked slower than his. It was still stuck marveling over the picture it had conjured up before. The tiny child with Edward's eyes. Green, as his had been when he was human. Lying fair and beautiful in my arms. I hoped he would have Edward's face exactly, with no interference from mine. It was funny how abruptly and entirely necessary this vision had become. From that first little touch, the whole world had shifted. Where before there was just one thing I could not live without, now there were two. There was no division. My love was not split between them now. It wasn't like that. It was more like my heart had grown, swollen up to twice its size in that moment. All that extra space already filled. The increase was almost dizzying. I'd never really understood Rosalie's pain and resentment before. I'd never imagined myself a mother, never wanted that. It had been a piece of cake to promise Edward that I didn't care about giving up children for him, because I truly didn't. Children, in the abstract, had never appealed to me. They seemed to be loud creatures, often dripping some form of goo. I'd never had much to do with them. When I dreamed of Renee providing me with a brother, I'd always imagined an older brother, someone to take care of me, rather than the other way around. This child, Edward's child, was a whole different story. I wanted him like I wanted air to breathe. Not a choice, a necessity. Maybe I just had a really bad imagination. Maybe that was why I'd been unable to imagine that I would like being married until after I already was. Unable to see that I would want a baby until after one was already coming. As I put my hand on my stomach, waiting for the next nudge, tears streaked down my cheeks again. Bella? I turned, made wary by the tone of his voice. It was too cold, too careful. His face matched his voice, empty and hard. And then he saw that I was crying. Bella! He crossed the room in a flash and put his hands on my face. Are you in pain? No, no. He pulled me against his chest. Don't be afraid. We'll be home in 16 hours. You'll be fine. Carlisle will be ready when we get there. We'll take care of this, and you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Take care of this? What do you mean? He leaned away and looked me in the eye. We're going to get that thing out before it can hurt any part of you. Don't be scared. I won't let it hurt you. That thing? I gasped. He looked sharply away from me toward the front door. Damn it. I forgot Gustavo was due today. I'll get rid of him and be right back. He darted out of the room. I clutched the counter for support. My knees were wobbly. Edward had just called my little nudger a thing. He said Carlisle would get it out. No, I whispered. I'd gotten it wrong before. He didn't care about the baby at all. He wanted to hurt him. The beautiful picture in my head shifted abruptly, changed into something dark. My pretty baby crying, my weak arms not enough to protect him. What could I do? Would I be able to reason with them? What if I couldn't? Did this explain Alice's strange silence on the phone? Is that what she'd seen? Edward and Carlisle killing that pale, perfect child before he could live? No, I whispered again, my voice stronger. That could not be. I would not allow it. I heard Edward speaking Portuguese again, arguing again. His voice got closer and I heard him grunt in exasperation. Then I heard another voice, low and timid, a woman's voice. He came into the kitchen ahead of her and went straight to me. He wiped the tears from my cheeks and murmured in my ear through the thin, hard line of his lips. She's insisting on leaving the food she brought. She made us dinner. If he had been less tense, less furious, I knew he would have rolled his eyes. It's an excuse. She wants to make sure I haven't killed you yet. His voice went ice cold at the end. Cora edged nervously around the corner with a covered dish in her hands. I wished I could speak Portuguese or that my Spanish was less rudimentary, so that I could try to thank this woman who had dared to anger a vampire just to check on me. Her eyes flickered between the two of us. I saw her measuring the color in my face, the moisture in my eyes. Mumbling something I didn't understand, she put the dish on the counter. Edward snapped something at her. I'd never heard him be so impolite before. She turned to go, and the whirling motion of her long skirt wafted the smell of the food into my face. It was strong, onions and fish. I gagged and whirled for the sink. I felt Edward's hands on my forehead and heard his soothing murmur through the roaring in my ears. His hands disappeared for a second, and I heard the refrigerator slam shut. Mercifully, the smell disappeared with the sound, and Edward's hands were cooling my clammy face again. It was over quickly. I rinsed my mouth in the tap while he caressed the side of my face. There was a tentative little nudge in my womb. It's okay. We're okay, I thought toward the bump. Edward turned me around, pulling me into his arms. I rested my head on his shoulder, my hands instinctively folded over my stomach. I heard a little gasp and I looked up. The woman was still there, hesitating in the doorway, with her hands half outstretched, as if she had been looking for some way to help. Her eyes were locked on my hands, popping wide with shock. Her mouth hung open. Then Edward gasped too, and he suddenly turned to face the woman, pushing me slightly behind his body, his arm wrapped across my torso, like he was holding me back. Suddenly, Cora was shouting at him, loudly, furiously, her unintelligible words flying across the room like knives. She raised her tiny fist in the air and took two steps forward, shaking it at him. Despite her ferocity, it was easy to see the terror in her eyes. Edward stepped toward her, too, and I clutched at his arm, frightened for the woman. But when he interrupted her tirade, his voice took me by surprise, especially considering how sharp he'd been with her when she wasn't screeching at him. It was low now. It was pleading. Not only that, but the sound was different, more guttural, the cadence off. I didn't think he was speaking Portuguese anymore. For a moment, the woman stared at him in wonder, and then her eyes narrowed as she barked out a long question in the same alien tongue. I watched as his face grew sad and serious, and he nodded once. She took a quick step back and crossed herself. He reached out to her, gesturing toward me and then resting his hand against my cheek. She replied angrily again, waving her hands accusingly toward him, and then gestured to him. When she finished, he pleaded again with the same low, urgent voice. Her expression changed. She stared at him with doubt, plain on her face as he spoke, her eyes repeatedly flashing to my confused face. He stopped speaking, and she seemed to be deliberating something. She looked back and forth between the two of us, and then, unconsciously it seemed, took a step forward. She made a motion with her hands, miming a shape like a balloon jutting out from her stomach. I started. Did her legends of the predatory blood drinker include this? Could she possibly know something about what was growing inside me? She walked a few steps forward deliberately this time and asked a few brief questions, which he responded to tensely. Then he became the questioner. One quick query. She hesitated and then slowly shook her head. When he spoke again, his voice was so agonized that I looked up at him in shock. His face was drawn with pain. In answer, she walked slowly forward until she was close enough to lay her small hand on top of mine, over my stomach. She spoke one word in Portuguese. Morte, she sighed quietly. Then she turned, her shoulders bent as if the conversation had aged her, and left the room. I knew enough Spanish for that one. Edward was frozen again, staring after her with the tortured expression fixed on his face. A few moments later, I heard a boat's engine putter to life and then fade into the distance. Edward did not move until I started for the bathroom. Then his hand caught my shoulder. Where are you going? His voice was a whisper of pain. To brush my teeth again? Don't worry about what she said. It's nothing but legends. Old lies for the sake of entertainment. I didn't understand anything, I told him, though it wasn't entirely true. As if I could discount something because it was a legend. My life was circled by legend on every side. They were all true. I packed your toothbrush, I'll get it for you. He walked ahead of me to the bedroom. Are we leaving soon? I called after him. As soon as you're done. He waited for my toothbrush to repack it, pacing silently around the bedroom. I handed it to him when I was finished. I'll get the bags into the boat. Edward? He turned back. Yes. I hesitated, trying to think of some way to get a few seconds alone. Could you pack some of the food? You know, in case I get hungry again? Of course, he said, his eyes suddenly soft. Don't worry about anything. We'll get to Carlisle in just a few hours, really. This will all be over soon. I nodded, not trusting my voice. He turned and left the room, one big suitcase in each hand. I whirled and scooped up the phone he'd left on the counter. It was very unlike him to forget things, to forget that Gustavo was coming, to leave his phone lying here. He was so stressed he was barely himself. I flipped it open and scrolled through the pre-programmed numbers. I was glad he had the sound turned off, afraid that he would catch me. Would he be at the boat now, or back already? Would he hear me from the kitchen if I whispered? I found the number I wanted, one I had never called before in my life. I pressed the send button and crossed my fingers. Hello? The voice, like golden wind chimes, answered. Rosalie? I whispered. It's Bella. Please. You have to help me.
Book 2. Jacob. And yet, to say the truth, reason and love keep little company together nowadays. William Shakespeare, A Midsummer Night's Dream, Act 3, Scene 1. Preface. Life sucks and then you die. Yeah, I should be so lucky. Chapter 8. Waiting for the damn fight to start already. Geez, Paul, don't you freaking have a home of your own? Paul, lounging across my whole couch, watching some stupid baseball game on my crappy TV, just grinned at me, and then, real slow, he lifted one Dorito from the bag in his lap and wedged it into his mouth in one piece. You better have brought those with you. Crunch. Nope, he said while chewing. Your sister said to go ahead and help myself to anything I wanted. I tried to make my voice sound like I wasn't about to punch him. Is Rachel here now? It didn't work. He heard where I was going and shoved the bag behind his back. The bag crackled as he smashed it into the cushion. The chips crunched into pieces. Paul's hands came up in fists, close to his face like a boxer. Bring it, kid. I don't need Rachel to protect me. I snorted. Right, like you wouldn't go crying to her first chance. He laughed and relaxed into the sofa, dropping his hands. I'm not going to go tattle to a girl. If you got in a lucky hit, that would be just between the two of us, and vice versa, right? Nice of him to give me an invitation. I made my body slump like I'd given up. Right. His eyes shifted to the TV. I lunged. His nose made a very satisfying crunching sound of its own when my fist connected. He tried to grab me, but I danced out of the way before he could find a hold, the ruined bag of Doritos in my left hand. You broke my nose, idiot! Just between us, right, Paul? I went to put the chips away. When I turned around, Paul was repositioning his nose before it could set crooked. The blood had already stopped. It looked like it had no source as it trickled down his lips and off his chin. He cussed, wincing as he pulled at the cartilage. You are such a pain, Jacob. I swear I'd rather hang out with Leah. Ouch. Wow. I bet Leah's really going to love to hear that you want to spend some quality time with her. It'll just warm the cockles of her heart. You're going to forget I said that. Of course. I'm sure it won't slip out. Ugh, he grunted, and then settled back into the couch, wiping the leftover blood on the collar of his t-shirt. You're fast, kid. I'll give you that. He turned his attention back to the fuzzy game. I stood there for a second, and then I stalked off to my room, muttering about alien abductions. Back in the day, you could count on Paul for a fight pretty much whenever. You didn't have to hit him then. Any mild insult would do. It didn't take a lot to flip him out of control. Now, of course, when I really wanted a good, snarling, ripping, break-the-trees-down match, he had to be all mellow. Wasn't it bad enough that yet another member of the pack had imprinted? Because really, that made 4 of 10 now. When would it stop? Stupid Myth was supposed to be rare, for crying out loud. All this mandatory love at first sight was completely sickening. Did it have to be my sister? Did it have to be Paul? When Rachel had come home from Washington State at the end of the summer semester, graduated early, the nerd, my biggest worry had been that it would be hard keeping the secret around her. I wasn't used to covering things up in my own home. It made me real sympathetic to kids like Embry and Colin, whose parents didn't know they were werewolves. Embry's mom thought he was going through some kind of rebellious stage. He was permanently grounded for constantly sneaking out, but of course, there wasn't much he could do about that. She'd check his room every night, and every night it would be empty again. She'd yell, and he'd take it in silence, and then go through it all again the next day. We'd tried to talk Sam into giving Embry a break and letting his mom in on the gig, but Embry'd said he didn't mind. The secret was too important. So I'd been all geared up to be keeping that secret. And then, 2 days after Rachel got home, Paul ran into her on the beach. Bada bing, bada boom, true love. No secrets necessary when you found your other half and all that imprinting werewolf garbage. Rachel got the whole story, and I got Paul as a brother-in-law someday. I knew Billy wasn't much thrilled about it either, but he handled it better than I did. Of course, he did escape to the Clearwaters more often than usual these days. I didn't see where that was so much better. No Paul, but plenty of Leah. I wondered, would a bullet through my temple actually kill me or just leave a really big mess for me to clean up? I threw myself down on the bed. I was tired, hadn't slept since my last patrol, but I knew I wasn't going to sleep. My head was too crazy. The thoughts bounced around inside my skull like a disoriented swarm of bees. Noisy. Now and then they stung. Must be hornets, not bees. Bees died after one sting. And the same thoughts were stinging me again and again.